Welcome to Cisflix, the podcast where we won't judge you for talking through the movie. Cisflix are the movies you laugh at, yearn for, and overanalyze with your girls, significant others, and now us.
We are your hosts,
Paola
and Nadja, two sisters and designers who discuss chick flicks we hate to love,
tropes we love to hate,
and all of the aesthetic choices in between. Join us as we break down our favorite movies together. Welcome back to our discussion on past lives as we get into part two and the second half of the movie. So just to recap what we already discussed, we are following Nora, our main character, who immigrated from Korea to Canada and as an adult has settled in New York, and her relationship with her childhood sweetheart, Haesung. At this point in the movie, Nora and Haesung have just stopped talking as adults. They were in this will-they-won't-they long-distance relationship that they have both decided to end. Nora is now starting a new chapter of her life, and so is Haesung. And now we're going to see where that life leads them.
So when we pick back up with Nora, 12 years have passed, and Nora is with Arthur, the gentleman that she met at the
artist residency.
And they are at the airport coming in through customs. The customs officer is asking them all the questions customs officer ask you when you're coming in from a foreign country. And here we get some exposition on Nora and her current relationship. They spent 10 days in Toronto, and they are now married and live in New York City, where they both work as writers, because these are all things that the customs officer is asking them.
Something that I really like about this shot is that it's filmed from behind the head of the customs official. So you, as the viewer, are staring directly at Nora and Arthur, almost from like the same eye line as the customs official, who, I mean, is asking the questions that you want to know the answers to. Like, oh, it's 12 years later and you guys are still standing there together. What the fuck is up? Are you married? Where are you living? Where have you been? Etc.
And I also love how this movie makes you take the point of view of a spectator. Not just as a movie watcher, but as a spectator in the room with them.
And I think that must come from, this is anecdotal. This is not something I've like read in an interview or anything like that. This is just an observation. I feel like maybe that might come from her experience, Celine Song's experience as a playwright, like as somebody staging plays, because so much of theater immerses the audience member in a way that you obviously can't do on film, right? Because film is capturing an isolated moment in time. Theater is happening right in front of you and around you. It's engaging the audience member in the movie to the extent possible, the same way that she would try to engage them in a theater. So we see some aerial shots of New York City and Arthur and Nora approaching each other from opposite sides of the street over a crosswalk, smiling intimately. They meet in the middle of the street, join hands, and then Arthur turns to walk in the same direction as Nora. It's really, honestly, like, fucking sweet.
I mean, and it also, like, shows you a meeting between them, right? It just shows you that they were walking opposite directions. They met, and now they're walking the same way.
And they're walking the same way based on where Nora is going.
Symbolism!
It looks, we cut over a couple of scenes kind of rapidly. So it looks like Nora is holding auditions, maybe for a play that she has written or a play that she's directing. There's an Asian American actress doing a line read. And the lines are, if you bought a ticket to see this show, took a subway or a cab to be here, it costs you something to be here and spend a couple hours with these women, that makes you some kind of immigrant. And all this cost me something too. I crossed the Pacific Ocean to be here. Some crossings cost more than others. Some crossings you pay for with your whole life. Again, this is very like self-referential to Celine Song and her works, because she does tons of like semi-autobiographical work, including this directorial debut of Past Lives. And I love that. I kind of love interpreting her as main character, interpreting her as this like storyteller with this really, really, really intimate story.
I think this is Celine's song speaking directly to the audience by way of Nora having written this dialogue for this play.
And we see Nora walk into a coffee shop or a bookstore of some kind, looking really fucking cool. She just looks very like...
She looks cool all the fucking time.
She really does, but she looks especially like a New Yorker. Especially, I think the wardrobe in this movie is incredibly subtle, but it does a really good job of like... She's relaxed. She's established. She knows who she is. She's in her 30s. She's not out here anxious about shit. She's married. She knows what the fuck is up. So like her clothes, even though they're very nondescript, do a really good job of reflecting that comfort and reflecting that confidence. And I love that.
It's like she's in control of her shit.
Yes.
And like laid back in that too, right? Like settled and in control.
Her styling here is a little bit different from the last chunk of time that we were at in the movie 12 years prior, where she had this straight middle part, very bluntly cut bob. Now she also has a bluntly cut bob. It's parted on the side and it's like texturized with waves to look much softer. Almost like, you know, she takes a curling iron to it in the morning or something to like give it a little bit more volume. And it suits her. Everything suits Greta Lee. She is gorgeous. It also has this air of the same type of like volume, comfort, space that we see her taking up, right? Like confidence, being more comfortable in her own skin. So she walks into this bookstore. You know, the camera pans over and reveals Arthur, her husband, is doing a book signing because he is an author. She's a playwright. He's an author. And the name of his book is Boner.
We don't know what this book is about.
And I'd love to read it.
And but maybe it's interesting.
She silently brings him coffee as he's talking to like the patrons of this bookstore who have come to buy his book. So we cut to them laying. And this is like kind of what we mean. Like this movie is not slow paced. It's fast paced. Shit goes. It is cut, cut, cut across different times, different scenes. We cut to them laying in bed in their apartment. The point of view of the viewer is almost like voyeuristic, where you're like looking at them from like their door being cracked open as they're like laying on their bed.
Celine Song loves doing shots through glass and windows and doorways. She loves doing shots through openings.
They're laying in bed at their apartment. Arthur, this is something that I love, has gone full koala on top of Nora. Like he's 100% just curled up on top of her.
Oh my God. Like he's supposed to be the big spoon, right? Like but it's almost like, I don't think it works that way.
Ain't no big spoon. Like she's like the pan and he's the spoon. Like he's just laying right on top of her.
He is wrapped around her. It's very funny.
He's asking her questions in Korean, like halting Korean that he's clearly made an effort to learn. And she's responding to him in English. So he's basically like, are you hungry? Yes. What do you want to get to eat? Oh, let's get fried chicken. Nice. And that's the entire scene. But it's this intimate like slice of life moment between them where you see the ease with which they communicate and how badly he wants to understand her entirely and be a part of her whole life, not just her English speaking life, but her Korean speaking life. And we cut to Nora and Arthur walking hand in hand. Nora asks, hey, do you remember Haesung? You know, my childhood friend. And Arthur's like, yeah, is that this week? And she says, yeah. And she sounds like super bummed. And she's like looking down at the ground. And Arthur's like, why is he coming here? Like, why is he coming again? And she's like, I don't know, like vacation?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And Arthur's like, alone? Okay. Like he's suspicious. Okay. Cut to
sus.
Suspicious. We cut to
is that what the kids are saying?
Absolutely
now?
Not. It's what the olds are saying. Suspicious. We cut to Haesung at a restaurant in Korea with the same four friends that we saw him with throughout this movie, so which I love so much. And they're clowning him because he's taking this trip to New York. One of them is like, you're not gonna go see that girl, are you? And Haesung tries to like play it cool. He says, I said loco. And he's like, who? What? What girl? And he's like, your first love, you fucking idiot. You're pretending you don't know who I'm talking about. And then
they call each other out. Hard. That's hilarious.
And another friend goes, oh, now that you broke up with your girlfriend? So again, more exposition. Haesung is like, no, like I'm not going to see her. Like she's married. She's been married for like 7 years. And the guys are all like, oh. shit. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And one of his friends, this is a friend thing to do, pulls up like the weather for New York on like the weather app on his phone and looks at Haesung and goes, oh, great time to go on vacation. It's going to be cold and rainy the entire time.
Oh, and he looks so defeated.
Haesung has like the best like hangdog face of just like, oh.
Gosh, damn it.
We cut to Haesung arriving to a very foggy and rainy New York. It is pouring fucking cats and dogs. It's comically raining. He hangs around his hotel, honestly, for what feels like a couple of days. Because what the fuck are you going to do around New York in the summer when it's raining? And we go from a shot of a puddle to a pond. The weather has finally broken. And Haesung is at Madison Square Park waiting nervously. He's wearing blue. And this is the last color that Nora saw him in when they were kids. He is clearly nervous. His posture is tense. And he's standing in front of a stone wall that portrays these two figures that are facing away from each other, which is a direct contrast to the sculptures he and Nora saw on their singular date back in Korea when they were kids. The two sculptures of a man and a woman facing each other. As he's standing there waiting,
we hear Nora call out his name. When he looks, she is standing across the pond. Again, symbolism, right? They live an ocean away from each other. Two sides of the world. This is a literal representation of that. Them standing across this pond in this park. And I feel like Celine's song also uses water to communicate throughout this story. Reflective surfaces, waters, windows. You know, even the sculptures that become kind of a symbol for them throughout this story is something that's reflective of the other, right? This man and a woman looking into each other, facing each other. Symbolism throughout this movie is amazing and consistent. She walks over to him and stands directly in front of him and goes, whoa, it's you. And we get a brief flashback of their last time in the park. When they were playing together as kids by those sculptures. This interaction is the direct mirror of that afternoon 24 years ago, except that behind them, those figures on the stone wall are now facing away from each other as opposed to the figures that they were playing on in that sculpture park that were facing towards each other. Nora hugs Haesung and he doesn't know what to do. He just like stands there.
I'm gonna say again, we're not super familiar with like intricacies of Korean culture, but like I know in American culture, you're just gonna fucking throw your arms around your people
that you haven't seen in forever. Yeah, and that's exactly what Nora does. She like just gives him this tight hug. He just kind of stands there and doesn't really know what to do. And then as he starts to warm up to the hug, like, and starts to kind of melt into the hug, she pulls back away from him. What can I do? He says to her. And, like, just stands there, like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. And she gives him another hug, and then they laugh together. It's really a beautiful moment of kind of like, you know how when you haven't seen a friend you haven't seen in a long time, or a family member you haven't seen in a long time, where, like, you can't stop smiling or you can't stop hugging each other. You can't stop grabbing to each other. It makes you giddy to, like, see this person. And you're like, oh, my God, I haven't seen you in so long and I miss you. Like, you can feel your body missing this person. And I'm talking about even platonic friends. And at this point, the last time they spoke was 12 years prior to that. So they just keep looking at each other and laughing and not really knowing what to say. Until Nora says, okay, we should go. They go on their way and they hop on the subway. So they're getting ready to do like a New York City, a little bit of a New York tour for Haesung. You assume this is his first time in New York City. On the train, they are standing opposite each other, both holding on to the pole. So this is the past lives shot. This is the movie poster shot. As they stand like this, they keep eye contact the whole time. So you as the viewer
are like, I'm uncomfortable.
But also you're kind of like, oh, shit, like, is there something going on? There's like this intensity. As the viewer, you sense longing and you're kind of like, all right, I don't know. Looks like something simmering. This has been an ember and something simmering is the feeling you get as a viewer watching this scene when they're on the train. They cross the Manhattan Bridge. my favorite New York bridge. So the Manhattan Bridge takes you from Manhattan to Brooklyn, right? This is
and back, I assume.
Or derf. And we used to take this bridge all the time because we would spend our summers in Brighton Beach in Brooklyn. The train would go through the Manhattan Bridge, and that was my favorite part of that train ride. So they cross the Manhattan Bridge into Brooklyn, and they walk through Brooklyn Bridge Park. This park is gorgeous. You're literally walking on the bank of the East River, and you see these amazing views of the like Manhattan skyline. The New York views in that area are spectacular. This is also like Dumbo Brooklyn, right? Everywhere you go, there's just
hashtag views.
We get this amazing shot while they're walking of the Manhattan Bridge. Thank you, Celine Song, for this shot, because it's a slow panning shot. And they're walking on a path under the bridge as they catch up over the last 12 years. Nora mentions that she visited Korea before her and Arthur got married and was really hoping to see him while she was there. You get the impression that maybe Haesung wasn't trying to see her when she was out there with her boyfriend. And she says, I was disappointed. And he just says, sorry. A sad sorry. I wanted to meet your girlfriend, she says. Mm. How is she? This is the girlfriend that he just broke up with. And she was hoping to meet her before she got married. So this is a long relationship. She got married 7 years ago. So this man has been with this girlfriend before they broke up for 7 or more years. He explains that they just recently started talking about getting married and now they're on a break. I'm sensing some commitment issues here from Haesung. Apparently, he has some apprehensions about getting married. And when Nora asks why, he answers with, the conditions aren't met. And first you're thinking he's talking about the girl. You're like, ooh, skirt, what? But what he says is, if you're going to marry an only son, he should make more money and be better. I'm too ordinary. And you're like, oh, okay. He doesn't see himself as a great provider. He sees himself as ordinary, as any Joe Schmo. He asks about Nora's husband. And at this point, they're walking. They've continued walking down the East River and they're coming towards this area of the park where there's like these carousels. And then there's like another landing where you can look across the river and kind of admire the New York skyline again. He asks her about her husband and she's like, you know, it's like planting two trees in one pot. Our roots need to find their place. She's talking about her husband as they are both equals. And as equals, you always have to kind of fight, push and pull a little bit for your space in the relationship. Nobody dominates the other. And also, I think this kind of speaks to the differences in their upbringing, right? They have to make room for their roots. They have to make room for how different they've come up, for their different customs and their different culture and traditions. And I thought that was beautiful. If you're paying attention around them, everyone's coupled up. Everyone is coupled up, smooching, holding hands, sitting on laps,
and
hugging.
And who called that when we were watching this the first time? Paola's daughter.
She did. Oh, it's my baby.
She's coming up in a household of analysis.
Truly. My 11-year-old is always very excited when she gets to watch movies with us. When I allow her, because I know there's not going to be anything inappropriate or anything like that. So this was one of those movies that we were able to sit together and watch. And as we're watching this scene, my 11-year-old calls out. She's like, oh, everyone around them is a couple. And we're like, okay, it was a proud mom moment. And then he continues to ask, you know, how does he get along with your family? Like, this guy's fishing. He's trying to figure out who is this guy that you're married to. She says yes and goes on to describe the ways and that he's embraced and adapted into her Korean culture, right? The games he likes to play, his favorite foods, that he tries to talk to them in Korean. And she asks about his girlfriend, kind of like, okay, well, how do you guys get along? And he takes this chance to reiterate, she is not my girlfriend right now. And like, just looks at her. And it's here that Nora starts to kind of get a sense that he's there with a motive. She's starting to sense the vibes that Haesung's giving. They turn around and they sit in front of the outdoor carousel. now they're like further apart. And Nora is visibly uncomfortable. Greta Lee, like her acting is so subtle and the shifts are so subtle. You can sense the tension. You can sense that she's uncomfortable. She's avoiding his eyes. Like she's avoiding his gaze. She looks at Haesung and asks, "Why did you look for me?" And I'm thinking they're talking about like then, like right there in the present time. Like, why'd you look for me when you were coming out here to New York?
I interpreted it as her asking, "Why did you look for me 12 years ago?"
And I had interpreted it as like right now, like, why are you out here? But no, they did mean 12 years ago. He asks and clarifies, 12 years ago, I wanted to see you one more time because you left so suddenly and I was so upset.
This is something I like too. This is him honoring his kid self. As we get older, I think we have a tendency to minimize the feelings that we felt when we were kids. And he's not doing that. Because it's like, I remembered how upset I was when I was fucking 12.
And I needed to find you and see you.
Exactly. Like, just because truly, my feelings were 12 years old doesn't mean they weren't real.
You know, and you get these moments from Haesung where he's like reserved in his feelings and maybe not expressive. But at the same time, he's pretty open about how he feels.
I would say he's very obvious. I don't know if I would say direct, but I think he's very obvious.
There you go. Okay. So maybe he's not direct. No, I don't know. I disagree with that too. Anyway. And she kind of says, sorry. She apologizes. Annoyed apologizes. Like, well, sorry. That's out of her control. What happened when she was so up was out of her control. She didn't decide to leave, but she apologizes. And he says, for what? But she's like annoyed at this point. And she says, you're right. There's nothing to be sorry about.
It's like she's tapping into her frustration from 12 years prior of like, you liked me so much to try and find me and then you couldn't fucking visit me or we couldn't make time to see each other in three dimensions. And, you know, I've had a completely different life.
No. And he goes on to say that she always entered his mind while he was in the military. So this is something you pointed out earlier, Naja, when in this scene, when they're marching and they sit down to lunch, he's like often thought he was thinking about her. And during this conversation, she can't look at him. She's looking off to the side. He, however, is intent on her face. And she goes, we were babies back then. And he replies with, when we met 12 years ago, we were babies then too. And this time she looks up at him and she says, we're not babies anymore. Now, throughout this whole conversation, they've been sitting in front of this carousel. And it is so clever. Yeah, I'm telling you, y'all gonna get tired of me. Because the symbolism behind this carousel being behind them, their youth being behind them, the last time they were connected and how that time has passed. Those days are long behind them. They're over. They're not babies anymore.
This movie reads like a book. There are so many layers all the time. That's really smart. I didn't even put that together. That's all you. That's all you, yo.
What? I feel like we talked about this.
Nah, you're just smart. Keep going.
That night when she gets back home, Arthur asks her how it went. And she goes, you were right. He came here to see me. So this is what Arthur was worried about before. When he's like, what's he coming for over here for again? And they had this conversation sometime off screen where he was like, he's coming out here to see you before he moves on with his life. He wants to see what's up. Nora confirms this when she arrives home that night. Haesung arrives to his hotel and sits in the corner under a lamp because he knows what he's doing is wrong.
Okay, no slander.
Go ahead, Naja.
I don't think Haesung is doing anything wrong. I think he's curious. Mm-hmm. I think he wants to know, wants to see. Here's a person that he hasn't been around in any meaningful way. In over a decade, hasn't communicated with in a meaningful way in over a decade, and hasn't physically seen in 24 years, a quarter of a century. Like, it is curiosity. You're gonna be curious about that shit. And 99% of the time, the shit that you're curious about, when you finally get into seeing it up close, fucking disappoints you because you made it something in your mind that it wasn't, especially with so much time to marinate on it. And I think that's what he's trying to prove or disprove to himself. I made this too big. No, I made it just right. Mm-hmm. I imagined it. No, I didn't.
Right. No, I feel you. I mean, he don't look very disappointed though.
And then that's kind of the point. It's like, I came here just with curiosity and now, oh shit, oh fuck. What have I done? Okay, so
I understand that, right? Like, having some closure, right? Maybe that's what he needs. Maybe he's there for closure. Maybe he's had all these big feelings, but where were these feelings 7 years ago? Now this woman's married and on with her life.
He had a girlfriend. Life goes in different directions.
He ignored her when she went out there, though. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, there's decision making here, and he's made a lot of these decisions.
That's true.
So here we are. Now he's about to make a big decision, right? He's talking about marriage with his girlfriend, and they needed a breakup because he can't make this decision without closure on this part of his life, maybe. But now he's coming into somebody's life and disrupting, knowingly. He's making waves. So this all hangs on Nora and her restraint or non-restraint, her place in her life. Like, it's really coming and just putting it on this person.
In many ways throughout the movie, you know Nora is in control of her relationships or of the men around her. And of course, we only really see these two men, her husband and Haesung.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one calling the shots. Subtly, very back burner in the background, but she's the one who's in control.
She does. So later that night, Nora's talking to her husband about how weird it felt to be with Haesung. It's almost comical, this scene, right? Because I feel it's almost like, it's like a stream of consciousness. She keeps harping on how Korean he is. Like, everything she says about him is because he's so Korean.
It's very repetitive to the point where it's almost annoying. And then you remember, This is exactly how I talk to people in my life.
And let me tell you how, as a child of immigrants, everything she's saying is spot on. It's 100% how you feel anytime you're interacting with somebody from back home, quote unquote back home, wherever that is, right? Where you don't feel enough. But here in the States, you also don't feel enough. You know, so she goes on to say, when I'm with him, I feel more Korean, but almost less Korean, right? There's this feeling that this person holds a part of your identity, a whole half of your identity, and you're able to relate on these specific things that are specific to your culture. Talk about it and laugh about it and joke about it. However, there's specific aspects of your life that are different now, and it's almost amplifying how maybe you've lost specific parts of your culture or specific practices, or how now you have different viewpoints because now you live in a different environment. It maximizes those two parts. It maximizes the side that you feel is true to your culture, and it maximizes the side that you feel has departed from your culture at the same time. And that's a very weird feeling. It's an unsettling feeling.
I would say it's a form of recognition. You're recognizing both a surplus and a lack between yourself and this other person.
A surplus and a lack. I kind of like how that sounds. Yeah.
It's a surplus of maybe nostalgia, some shared culture, some shared familiarity, and then this lack of comfort, this lack of ease where it's rusty now. I know that's how I feel when I'm... Even when I talk to...
Yeah, you feel rusty. That's exactly it. You feel rusty. You feel like you're gotten on a bike that you haven't gotten on for a long time.
Like, that's...
And the shit's squeaking. You're saying words wrong. And
the grammar's all fucked up. And then you're like, can I just speak to you in English? God damn it. And then you feel like every fucking American stereotype to ever exist. And then your own family is looking at you with this fucking look of pity because you can't remember this random fucking word in Spanish you've never used before in your fucking life. It's a real fucking feeling.
She's trying to explain to her very white husband how when she's with him, she feels both more Korean and not Korean enough. And then she's explaining this idea that there is a difference between being Korean versus Korean American. It's not the same. It's like a subcategory.
This is a very silly anecdote that I'm probably going to cut, but here's a dumb, non-specific example of something like this, right? That has happened in my life as a Dominican American person. I went back to Dominican Republic for a family member's wedding 8 years ago. God damn. And we were all heading out to kind of walk around this part of the city, La Zona Colonial. And I was like, all right, well, what's the occasion? Like, what are we doing? And it was like, oh, no, we're just going to chill and walk around. And I was like, bet. It's hot. It's in the 80s. I'm going to wear a pair of denim cutoff shorts and a crop t-shirt, which is what I would wear when it's 80 degrees at home and I'm going to go walk around. And I put on my denim cutoffs, put on my little t-shirt, my little Vans, my sneakers, and my wavy wild hair.
Did you put your Vans on because they look like sneakers? Mm-hmm,
that's why I got my Vans on, because they look like sneakers. Thank you. Thank you for calling out. you're fucking just age ourselves 20 years. And I walk out to the car. And my cousins, with their tucked-in polos and belted ironed jeans and leather loafers. God damn it. Are fucking looking at me like, why are you dressed in pajamas? Why are you dressed in rags from the beach? Street?
Did I not get the memo?
And I was like, what's wrong with how I'm dressed? Like... But it's just, those are the micro cultural differences where it's like, yeah, instinctively, I know that Dominicans can be a little fastidious with how they dress and a little formal and whatever. And a lot of cultures consider Americans to be incredibly casually dressed and incredibly casually presented. I get that. But it was so weird in that moment. The occasion is we're just chilling and walking around and you're going to look at me sideways because I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt.
Like you showed up in khakis to a wedding or something.
Yeah. Oh my god.
You showed up in khakis and a pair of Sperry's.
Pretty much.
Yeah, no, no, no. And those are like little minor, just regular things you don't think about that suddenly you stand out. And guess what? Everybody's looking at you like, oh, yeah. And now you're uncomfortable and
now you're like, I should go home and change into my leather loafers and iron jeans. Tuck my polo shirt in.
I didn't even pack that to come to a tropical
country. I don't even
have
a belt. Like, but that's the thing, though, too. It's so many subtleties because I can spot a tourist, even when they're not in tourist locations in the city. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can spot those people at fucking 40 paces, like, because they don't fit. The thing doesn't fit right. People in New York dress a million different ways, but you know when one of them is like, I live in Williamsburg. And you know when it's like, well, I'm from fucking Estonia. And you're like, okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're not from here. I know it. See, sorry, that was a tangent.
So while Nora's having this stream of consciousness, she's kind of getting ready for bed. She's in the bathroom in front of the bathroom mirror. Mm-hmm. She's brushing her teeth. She's putting on her face cream. Her husband's in the kitchen, and across from him, there's also a mirror. In this scene, there's two mirrors reflecting each of them, right? Nora's in front of the bathroom mirror. Across from the kitchen where her husband is, there's a mirror like on a door or something. So you can see the reflections and you can see what they're doing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's almost kind of communicating, what are they projecting at this moment? Because they're kind of in a moment of insecurity a little bit, right? Nora's expressing a bit of insecurity about how out of place maybe she felt or how at home she felt. Kind of like that confusion with Haesung. And the husband's kind of hearing this and starting to feel a little self-conscious himself. This is not a comfort he can provide for her. He cannot give her a comfort of home. This is something that this other person that is now being presented almost as competition has over him. Or at least that's how he's interpreting that. And he's trying very hard not to project. You can see the discomfort in his face while Nora's making these statements. And this is confirmed by his next question, which is he attractive? And you're kind of like, where did that question come from? It seems so out of place. He feels threatened by this man representing the opposite of him. And the way she answers him almost kind of sets you back a little bit because you're like, oh, that's not what I would have wanted to hear. Because she answers with, I don't think so. You know, he's really masculine in this way that's really Korean.
And that comes back from the beginning of the movie where her mom is like, oh, well, why do you like Haesung? And she's like, he's really manly.
He's manly.
He's a 12-year-old boy.
So this is a trait that she's attracted to, this manliness. And then he goes, well, are you attracted to him? Right? Because he could be attractive and you not be attracted to him.
For sure.
And she answers again with, I don't think so. I don't know, but I don't think so. And you're like, ooh, Arthur, Mujer de Dios.
I cringed watching this scene. I mean, I see myself in it. Like, I don't know if this is like a representation of Celine's song, but like, I'm a terrible liar, especially when asked a direct question. I'm almost unable to lie. Like, even if I'm trying to do it with my voice, my face will give me away. It's just, it's not worth it. So in the situation where someone's like, oh, well, do you find them attractive? I would probably answer that honestly of like, I don't know, maybe. Oh, could be. Me? Yeah. Like,
he's hot.
What a man. What a manly man.
He's so
man.
Manly.
Oh, and so I kind of understand that, because her having an acknowledgement of that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, we should fuck. Like, it's just kind of like,
right,
sure.
Right.
I'm, you know, who's not attracted to Jeremy Allen White? That doesn't mean you're going to change your life because you're, like, attracted to a person. But this is clearly something that, as you mentioned, threatens her husband and his sense of security in his relationship. This situationship childhood friend has been, like, the thorn in Nora, probably for as long as he's known her. And she is so open with him. That's how you should be with your spouse. No bullshit.
I respect it. Yeah, I respect it 100%. Like, as much as in this scene, I'm like, ooh. Ah. Ouch. Hey. At the same time, I'm like, oh, but they're so open in their relationship where she's comfortable communicating this with him. Mm-hmm. And he's taking it in, and he seems uncomfortable too, but he's being sensitive to like this kind of,
he's giving her
thought
the space
process that
he's giving her the space to process it in spite of his discomfort.
Yes. As the viewer, you're taken aback, but they're fine. And this is kind of nice that they're able to have this conversation out in the open and not harbor.
It's lovely that she is so open with him. And she kind of like, on this same train of thought, she goes on to say, you know, for such a long time, he was this kid in my head. Then he was an image on the screen. And now he's a physical person. And it feels really intense. And I think I just missed him. And I think I miss Seoul. I miss Korea.
Right. And he represents all of that.
And Arthur asks her, does he miss you? I think Nora very carefully responds, I think he misses the 12-year-old crybaby me. He misses the me that exists in his head, not the me as I exist today, because he doesn't know me of today, right? Is what's implied. And Arthur asks, you were a crybaby? And you're like, ooh. Oh man, like there's a lot missing. There's so much context that's missing. Like, I met my husband when I was 24. He has no idea what I was like when I was fucking 10, 12, right. 15.
But you also get the impression that she's not very emotional around her husband, or hasn't been in the years that they've been together. She doesn't present as somebody who would be a crybaby.
Exactly.
So then there's this other side of her that he doesn't know.
I mean, he's going through it in this moment. Many thoughts. He's having many, many thoughts.
He is quietly distraught.
He's just kind of like, when is this guy leaving? Come on now. Speed it up.
When is this trip over? Because I cannot take this for a minute much longer.
All right, everyone. Wrap it up. The trip is done.
Let's wrap this shit up.
And as they get ready for bed, she asks him, like, are you mad? You know, like, are you mad at me? And he says, like, no, of course not. Like, it's your childhood sweetheart. I don't think you're going to run away with him or anything.
Are you?
Are you?
Are you? And he really asks, are you? Like, he's also starting to fish. I love that she looks at him and she's like, I'm not going to miss my rehearsals for some dude.
But that's her the whole time.
This is Nora energy.
As soon as anyone gets in the way of like her career, the shit she wants to do, she's like, no, why the fuck would I do that? I'm going to do the me thing and do the career I want and the work I've done. Anything else that you guys want, shoo. I'm not going to put up with it. And he's really, really uncomfortable. He feels very off kilter, but he's like incredibly understanding and really kind. And obviously, like, you as a consumer of this story enjoy the idea of this like nostalgic return. And at the same time, kind of like that there's a rightful couple and a wrongful couple. Because in movies, that's usually easy to do. Even when someone is in a previously established couple, but it's not going right. and then they meet the person where it's like going better. You as the viewer, you're like, oh, I don't want them to be with so-and-so, like a brunette girlfriend in hometown. I want them to be with blonde in the city, or like opposite. I'm just describing an inverse Hallmark movie.
No, truly. They make it so easy in movies for you to discard one relationship over the other. And they do that with
no
like
turmoil,
you know, tension.
No battle, no dealing with it, just doing it. And you're realizing that it's so much more complicated even before you get to the point of like choosing a relationship. And I'm putting that in air quotes. It is so, so much more complicated to see the life you have, weigh it against a life that you have never experienced and can never experience and you'll never understand or know. And the impossibility of that at the point where you just have to discard it entirely. You just have to be like, I cannot think about this. I'll torture myself forever. The what if thing. I love a game of what if. Okay. 3 a.m. me unable to sleep playing what if. That's what she does up there, baby. That's my brain's occupation. But it's futile. It is an exercise in futility to ponder the different routes your life could have taken. And I think Nora presents outwardly, I'm not saying this is necessarily how she is like through and through, but I think she outwardly presents this kind of like no nonsense resolve where it's kind of like, I'm acknowledging that he probably misses me. I'm acknowledging that I might find him attractive, but I'm not doing anything with that information. It's processing and then it is dissipating. It's flowing through me. And her husband is genuinely so kind and understanding even through these interactions. Like he's not, he's uncomfortable, but he's not antagonizing her. He's also not encouraging her to shit on Hae-sung. He's not shitting on Hae-sung. He's just kind of like, okay, well, I guess I have to feel this too. As your partner, I also have to sit here and feel this with you. So then you're not rooting for anybody. It's not about rooting for somebody. It's just about experiences happening to people.
As a viewer up until this point, you're rooting for the friends to lovers. You're rooting for a rekindling. You're rooting for Nora and Hae-sung because you've seen their lives weave in and out. That's what you want to see resolved. But then you meet Nora's husband and you're like, this man is precious. He is a gem.
Like a good dude.
And you see like just how he's just supporting her and he's not pushing her one way or the other. And he's not discouraging her from going to see Hae-sung. He is understanding. He is giving her space. And you're just like, he does not deserve what I'm rooting for right now.
He's better than this.
And now you're in this place where you're like, all right, may the best man win.
Lord Jesus. As they're having this conversation, like Arthur kind of like chuckles and suddenly plays the part of the viewer where he's like, you know, this is such a good story. Like two childhood sweethearts reconnect after 24 years and they realize they're meant for each other. And in this story, I'm the evil white American husband that stands in the way of destiny.
And you're like, fuck. He just exposed you is what he did.
All of
While
us,
you're watching this movie.
All of us are on the same playing field now. It's all
he
been even.
He just exposed the shit out of you.
You know, he compares their own story, you know, like we met at this artist's residency program and that's not as cool or interesting or like epic and it doesn't feel like destiny. And, you know, he asks her like, are you happy with your life? Where it led you being here with me? Is it what you pictured when you left Korea? Is this what your parents wanted for you? And she's like, are you asking me if you, Arthur, are the answer to my family's immigrant dream? Bitch, you know that's not what the fuck he's asking. And she's being, at this part of the movie, the first time I watched it, I got so annoyed because I was like, you are being so deliberately evasive. All this man is asking for is affirmation. He's not even asking for honesty. He literally just wants you to be like, yes, I love you so much.
Truly.
Yes, you're the best.
And in her not giving him that right away, it causes doubt in the viewer.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, he's saying all this stuff like our story, it doesn't seem like it's meant to be. We just happen to be at the same place at the same time. And we just happen to do this and we just happen to do that. If you're paying attention to one of the main themes in our story is how things happen for a reason and the journeys of lives and the role people have in people's lives. To Nora, these things didn't happen by accident. And the way she answers is, this is where I ended up because this is where I'm supposed to be. The way she says it, though, sounds so practical, almost like removed from feeling. You say that, and yes, it's true, but it's almost like in the tone you say it, it might make a difference. The way she said it was so deadpan that you're kind of like,
Okay, counterpoint. I'll just speak for us, but I feel like this is such an immigrant experience avatar. Like, how many times have we heard our parents, our mother, be like, you know what? This is how it's all supposed to be. Because again, it's like, I don't have the luxury of time to think about the alternatives. We're running. We're on the hamster wheel.
What's next? What are we doing? What are we solving?
We're maintaining life. We're solving problems. We're moving from country to country. We're doing all of these steps and all of these bonus things that are difficult that I have to dedicate my energy to. No, I'm not going to sit around and think about stuff.
Meant to be? What the fuck is that? I got to get up for work
meant
tomorrow.
To be? You know what's meant to be? I'm meant to be making this check. I am meant to be these paying bills. My bills.
These bills ain't asking me if it's meant to be.
like literally, it's like I'm meant to be cooking this dinner. Like, there's very little like romanticism and nuance, I think, in the way that certain immigrants, right? Like, I think the immigrant experience, especially, like, it kind of robs you of your childlike wonder because you are faced with so many difficulties in communication, transporting yourself, acclimating to the culture all at the same time, that even when Nora was like, yeah, I used to cry a lot and then no one cared.
Now I don't.
That is such an immigrant vibe. There's this really lovely part, like right after she says this, where Arthur says, did you know that when you talk in your sleep, you speak Korean?
Ugh, this part gets me.
This part, like this, first of all, this actor, great choice. His delivery of all of this, like the gentleness with which he delivers all of his lines, his vulnerability, he's incredibly vulnerable. Like every time you see him in this movie, he does fantastic. You know, he continues to say, you never sleep talking English. You only dream in Korean. And sometimes I think it's cute, but sometimes it's scary because you dream in a language I don't understand. And you're just like, the writing, so good.
This got me.
It's so good. Literally watching the movie for the first time, Paul and I sitting next to each other on the couch, I'm pretty sure we paused this and looked at each other and we're just like,
and we're like, god,
oh my god, so good. Meanwhile, my brother-in-law is like, nothing's happening. What are they even saying? Nothing's happening.
All right.
Anyway.
He just said a whole bunch of nothing.
God. Anyway.
Fucking men. Arthur is a man written by a woman. Let me just say.
100%.
I don't know where this person exists.
Fucking go. Yeah, let's all find
he
author.
In Celine's song.
Elusive author of Boner. Arthur, whatever the fuck his last name is in this movie.
Their room, it's dark and it's very blue. Mm-hmm. It keeps cutting back to Haesung, who's in his hotel room, lit by this yellow light. And I don't know what that means. Because I feel like throughout the movie, Haesung's always been in the blues. It only seems like in this specific time, they've kind of switched the lighting for Haesung and for Nora. And I don't know, maybe I got to sit with that for a little bit, think about it a little bit more. But I feel like there's some symbolism behind that.
Imagine us sitting with it and thinking about it a little bit more, dear listener. Woo.
More time.
Just imagine.
You mean more time? More symbolism, Paula? Shut the fuck up.
All the episodes longer, I think. I think they're all too short.
Oh, man. She's wearing a blue shirt to sleep.
Yeah, she's wearing a blue shirt to sleep because she's brought Haesung home on her.
He's on her mind. She's on his mind.
There it is. We sat with it. We figured it out.
We sat with it.
There it is, guys.
Guys, fucking figured it out.
Just in case you thought we were AI, because we were so eloquent and good at this. Just in case you thought we were ChatGPT. Here we are, figuring it out live.
Yo, that's exactly it, Naja. She's got Haesung on the dome.
Not on the dome.
He's in her mind, so she's projecting that color into their life. Haesung seeping into their life. They're talking about it while they're laying in their marriage bed.
Their marriage bed? Queen Charlotte?
They're laying together, who are they talking about? They're talking about Haesung. So the lighting is blue. And he's back in his hotel room thinking about her and thinking about their day. So his lighting is yellow, like the sun, like Nora, Nora energy.
Nora.
It's so fucking good. Get the fuck out of my face. It's so good.
It's so good.
Celine song, I am sending you my therapy book.
Anyway.
Oh my God.
So we cut from this scene to the next day where Nora is once again meeting with Haesung. And today they're taking the ferry. This shot, like, this is another one, dog, where Bala and I are watching. We pause it and I'm like, this is amazing looking. They're kind of walking up, like, in this line to embark onto the ferry. And they're small because it's a very, very wide shot. And you really just see the silhouettes of their figures moving because this line is underneath an awning. So no direct sunlight to them, but it's incredibly backlit. So everyone who's in this line that you're following as they're moving towards where they're going to embark, the contrast in this shot is really, really stark. It's so backlit. You get all of these like silhouette figures. It's almost like starkly black and white with just like a very spare amount of color.
The colors that stand out are white because of the background. There's a man with a red bag and most of the passengers, including Haesung, are wearing blue. Mm-hmm. And there's an American flag flying behind them. So this is kind of like almost a representation, I think, of like, here's the American experience.
Mm.
Here's the American dream. Like
the American Dream Mall in New Jersey. No, I'm kidding. So as they're in line, they're chatting a little bit. The dialogue is very sparse. We see Haesung pull a snack out of his bag. And this seems like maybe a very, I don't know if it's specifically Korean, but definitely a heavily immigrant thing to do. Pack a little food.
It really is. You pack a little snack.
Pack
a little snack. And you always have extra.
Like the time we went to the zoo when we were kids and our family packed an entire fucking picnic for like 7 children.
Opened it on the tram.
Yep. To avoid paying zoo prices for food in the 90s. How much could it have been? $3? How much could a banana cost? $10? So, so, you know, he asks her, when you were little, you wanted to win the Nobel Prize. 12 years ago, you wanted to win the Pulitzer. Which award do you want to win now? And she's kind of like humoring him. And she's like, a Tony. This bitch is out here writing plays. And as they're on the ferry, we get these really beautiful shots of the city, the Statue of Liberty.
The water. There's a moment where the camera just focuses on the water pushing behind the boat.
Which is stunning. And as on the ferry, they do a couple of touristy pictures. This does really tickle me because he poses again in just like a very not American way. Like he doesn't smile with his teeth. Like he's not moving much of his face. Like he's like standing kind of still and it looks like a LinkedIn picture. And you're just like, come on, show joy. And Nora's just like, loosen up. Like you're so fucking stiff.
Yeah. No, and then they take some selfies.
He loosens up a little bit, but not quite. Yeah, he throws up a couple peace signs. Not in the cool way. In the geeky way.
not in the cool way. They really took advantage of the city views. It's almost like the city is telling you a story. It's like it's a piece of artwork in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Gorgeous. So after they're doing these like touristy pictures, you know, they're sitting on the ferry and Nora is showing Haesung her wedding pictures. They're very nice and like elevated, but you can tell that maybe it was kind of low budget. Like her wedding was like a very low key affair. He mentions like how young she looks in these pictures. And she's like, yeah, I mean, we had to get married quickly. I needed my green card. We weren't planning to get married so soon, kind of implying like we probably would have gotten married anyway, but I'll never know because we had to do it for me to get my green card. I feel like there's this tension after she talks about that between her and Haesung where he's kind of like,
he's like, oh, green card.
You wouldn't have married him in every universe. He's not the raving love of your life. Like,
so this is like a utility marriage. Oh, okay.
A little bit. But obviously, it's like, you know, as the viewer that she and her husband care for each other very much and like have a special relationship and understanding. But like, yeah, it's kind of like, oh, your life could have been different if you didn't want to stay in New York. If you were cool going back to Canada or coming back to Korea, your life would have been totally different.
Right.
And that evening, they go to Nora's apartment to meet Arthur because they're all going to get dinner together. I don't know who planned that, but it was a terrible idea. And Arthur's in the apartment. He is tense. The shit is tense. It's weird. Arthur greets him in Korean, you know, because, again, as we've seen as the viewer, like, he cares about preserving a little bit of Norse culture. Haesung greets him in English. His English, it's not terrible, but it's heavily accented and halting. In that moment of, like, Arthur saying it, you know, greeting in Korean, Haesung greeting in English, and then Haesung commenting to Nora, his Korean is really good. Like, the ice is kind of broken in a sweet way because Haesung kind of goes out of his way to compliment Arthur, and then Arthur is, like, a little bit less on his guard. And obviously, like, not listen, not for nothing, Haesung is a very handsome man. So it's like, I'm sure meeting him in person didn't feel great.
And he's like, he's got a bit of build on him. He's got a bit of height on Arthur. Yeah. And you're kind of like, I don't know.
I'm dead.
Haesung's looking like a meal.
Arthur's looking like a side dish.
He looking like a side dish.
He's looking like a side salad. Haesung's a steak and mashed potatoes. Like, you know, he out here. You know, it becomes a really sweet exchange. And Arthur's kind of like, all right, well, what do you want to eat? You know, your last night in New York. And Haesung, this is like so cute. Like, this moment is just adorable because he just goes, pasta.
Pasta.
like a light bulb just went off on top of his head. And he's like, pasta.
It was like with the quickness that he responded, he was ready for that answer. He had it on his list. I am going to have pasta when I visit New York. When I visit New York, that's what
Paola
I mean.
Paola also gets pasta. Meanwhile, the thing I want to eat when I'm in New York is Korean food. We're all different. So we see kind of like a montage quickly of them walking, kind of chatting with each other, going to like a very cozy looking Italian restaurant, eating pasta. Then we cut to them at the bar where we first meet them at the beginning of the movie, where we get that spectator's view of them. What are they to each other? Why are these people here? We're watching them sitting at the bar talking. And, you know, Haesung, he's mostly throughout this entire conversation speaking in Korean and will occasionally speak in English in a moment of like wanting to include Arthur, but more complicated thoughts, he will exclusively communicate in Korean and Nora will just do a little translating. He talks about his military service, the work culture in Korea, like how many hours he works and how he doesn't make that much money and that it's been a very frustrating professional life for him. And as they're talking, like, again, Nora's doing a bit of translating. She's kind of bridging this conversational gap between Haesung and Arthur. I was going to say, as she's translating, she also picks and chooses how specific she is with Arthur about whatever Haesung has said. And I found that interesting as I was watching, where Haesung will say, like, a long statement. And then she just turns to Arthur and goes, yeah, it sounds like working in Korea is hard. And it's like, okay, girl.
That could be like, I'm not translating all
right.
That. This is like, the gist of what he said.
I know you're not on Twitter, but literally, Paola, like, I'm so happy for you, or I'm so sorry that happened. I ain't reading all that. Like, that's like the vibe you get where she's just like, yeah, whatever. And then Arthur's just left there being like, I know he said more than that. Like, what?
But you know he also understands a bit of Korean.
Exactly.
He has spent time with her family. He's trying to learn Korean. So you don't know to what length he understands, but you know he understands some.
At least basics. And Haesung tells Nora, like, you know, I'm glad you immigrated. Korea is too small a country for you and your ambition.
And now at this point, it's kind of Haesung turning to Nora and kind of
engaging her specifically.
For this portion of their communication, it's really just them two.
And to Arthur's credit, he fully just lets this happen. I've known so many lesser men who would be like, hello, hello.
They would not be there.
Yeah.
No, they would leave.
Or they would either leave or they'd be like, what the fuck are y'all saying? It's time for me to get really angry because I don't know how to brand any of my other emotions.
I'd be like, hey, hey, hey.
Notice me.
Notice me.
Like, yeah. And he just lets them have whatever moment it is that they need
to
have.
He doesn't try to participate in the conversation. He's just hanging off to the side. But Celine Song will occasionally show his profile. He might be listening. His ears are open. He's hearing what's going on. You don't know how much he understands.
Yeah.
Because they're speaking solely in Korean at this point.
So as Haesung is really focusing more of his attention on Nora, he seems to have a moment where he kind of like settles about something. Something kind of slides into place for him and he has a different demeanor for a second. He's kind of like, I'm glad I got to see you. Thank you for introducing me to your husband, because I can tell he really loves you. I didn't think that liking him would hurt this much. Oof. And you pass away. As the feelings, the emotion, you simply die.
Because it's almost like he says out loud, and it's funny to say this, like, it's also in the way he delivers it. Because even though I don't pick up on his inflection, it's the pauses and the facial expressions, right? You also kind of feel this with him. Because when you met Nora's husband, you're ready to not like him. You're ready for some shit to go down, for Nora to be like, peace, I'm going back to my boo. But that doesn't happen. And you're kind of like, fuck, he's a nice guy. Damn.
He's a nice guy. He seems really good for her.
Ugh. Ooh, Nora, what are you going to do? Because I don't know.
My feelings are so complicated.
This is like your friend coming to you for advice. And you're like, girl, I don't know what you're going to do, but let me know when you find out. Because
Damn. That's crazy.
Wow, that sounds like that's a hard situation.
So Hae-sun continues to say, when we stopped talking, like, I really missed you. And he asks if she missed him too. And she answers, of course. This is what I'll say about this scene. Nora, like, I've used the word restraint already to describe facets of this movie and facets of Nora's characterization and Greta Lee's acting maybe 1,000 times. Hopefully less by the time I've given this an edit. But the restraint in Nora and the difficulty in acting, that level where you're exposing a feeling to the viewer without exposing it to your scene partner. Like, what? How do you do that? You can tell there's something inside of her bubbling, but it's so subtle. It's so under the surface. Like, she's really pushing this down. She is not trying to entertain whatever nostalgia, like, walking down memory lane Hae-sung is trying to do. She's just like, yeah, I miss you, totally,
It's like just like a clench of the jaw or just like a slight frown. It's so subtle.
To the point where the first time I watched this, I was like annoyed. Like, Paola and I paused it and I was like, dog, throw him a bone. Like, he's all the way in New York trying to see you and shit.
Can you show him a little ankle? Like, do something. The first time I watched this, I felt like I didn't know what was coming out of Nora next. Like, I couldn't figure her out.
You're not supposed to figure her out because the men in her life don't have her figured out.
And I was kind of just waiting for a switch or waiting for a word or waiting for a reveal or a declaration.
She keeps such a lid on it. Like, honestly, truly, to the point where I was like, Nora, what the fuck are you feeling? Like, can we help my man a little bit over here? Damn.
Help us out. I'm trying to figure out where this story's going. Damn. You don't know. You don't know. You got to stick around.
You do. Man, for the next episode, part three. I'm kidding. He says, but you had met your husband already.
You missed me, but you had already met your husband.
Exactly. And you know what, folks? We're always here advocating for complicated feelings. Because she comes back and she's like, you'd met your girlfriend. So what the fuck are you saying?
Pretty much. She says it with the quickness. There was no thought. There was no pause.
She's fresh mad about that.
Yes.
Just the memory. She's pissed. It feels like they're having two conversations at the same time. They're talking to each other as childhood friends who miss each other. Conversation one. And they're talking to each other as like openly resentful former lovers in conversation two. And they're happening concurrently. There's these flashes of vulnerability, like the way she responds to him saying that she had already met her husband, that you're just like, whoa, like, Nora, what? You usually don't show this kind of shit at all.
And I think that their relationship was always in between that limbo, in between childhood friends and lovers. It never resolved one way or the other.
Yeah. He apologizes to her and she kind of like awkwardly laughs because now they're just trying to like get away from this tense part of this conversation. Again, he is like laying himself bare. Like, it feels too intimate for the viewer, honestly, where he's just like all of these what ifs regarding her, you know, and what if he had come to New York when she asked him to? Or what if she never left when they were kids? Like, they probably would have ended up dating and they probably would have gotten married. What if all of those things happened? As Paola mentioned, like, Arthur's there the whole time. My man's ears are open, but he is not responding to anything at all. John Magaro, the actor that plays Arthur, just like this exercise in like vulnerability, impatience, vulnerability, patience, love, sympathy, because you know he's sympathetic to Haesang. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been nice to him at all.
And all of this without dialogue plays on his face. He's showing at the same time irritation, but patience. How do you do that? John Magaro definitely does this amazing job of balancing all these layers of emotions on his face and expressing them without doing a damn thing.
Haesang continues to say, you know, what he learned during this visit, during this like short 2 or 3 day exposure to Nora, is that he liked her when they were kids. And again, as adults, because of the person that she was and continues to be. And the person that she is someone who leaves and pursues her own goals and enriches her own life and ultimately chooses herself.
Yeah, I think by leaves in this sentence, he means like somebody who keeps moving, who won't stay static.
You know, she answers by saying the Na-young you remember doesn't exist here, but she did exist 20 years ago. I left her behind with you.
Ooh. Aw, Nora.
He says, even though I was only 12, I loved her. And, you know, this is kind of going back to what we were saying before. Like, just because you're a kid doesn't mean your feelings matter less. Maybe you just have a rougher understanding of them. But it doesn't mean that your feelings aren't real or authentic to you just because you're a child.
They had big feelings for each other and they felt some for real.
Even at 12. She goes on to say, I think there was something in our past lives. Otherwise, why would we be here together right now? But in this life, we don't have the inyun to be that kind of person to each other. Mm-hmm. Arthur's fucking ears are open. He remembers this inyun shit. That's how she seduced him.
Truly, he can't forget that. No, truly. And it's also going back to kind of that conversation she was having with her husband in bed the evening before, where she's like, this is where I'm supposed to be. You know, it's funny because she both embraces this sense of control, but in the same sense, she also has this trust and this faith in Inyeon. And not that she says it a lot outwardly throughout the movie, but even with her just saying like, this is where I ended up, this is where I'm meant to be, is showing you that she believes both that you control the choices you make in life, but also there is some destiny to it.
Yes.
And she embraces that.
That's like smoothly immigrant. Like, no one will teach you how to accept shit like an immigrant will. No. Like, truly.
This is what happens.
This is what it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is.
Ike.
¿Y qué se va a hacer mi hija? Imagínate.
Pero, uh-huh.
Dime tú.
Dime, mis hija. Haesang responds, you know, she and Arthur have inyun. Because to Arthur, she isn't someone who leaves. She's someone who stays.
And she turns to Arthur and it's like, hey, we're talking about you. Mm-hmm. And Arthur kind of smiles like, I know, I've been listening to you.
I'm not an amateur. You guys think I'm new here? I ain't new to this. I'm true to this. Haesang asks to Nora again, who do you think we were to each other in our past lives? Now this is like an opportunity to bring a little more levity into this conversation. And they go back and forth with like jokes. But
she does end at this kind of beautiful line. And she's like, maybe one of us was a bird that landed on the branch.
At this point, Nora excuses herself to the restroom and Arthur and Haesang are left alone at the bar. And Haesang, again, in like this halting English, apologizes for he and Nora having this like separate conversation. And Arthur says, you know, it's okay. Like, I'm glad you came. I feel like it was the right thing to do. It's almost like this grants him the opportunity to be like magnanimous, where he's like, no, of course, what you needed. Yes, I'm happy for you. Like, this is what you needed to resolve this thing for you. But don't worry, she's my wife. We're going home together later. Like,
well, yes, but also I get this impression that this conversation that just happened at this bar, that Arthur was overhearing, probably understanding some, if not all, help him feel more secure about his relationship.
Yeah. So Haesang points out he and Arthur also have inyun, right? Because that's kind of like what you learn when Nora's describing this to Arthur initially. Like, you brush someone on the street, that's inyun. Mm-hmm. Like, you have all of these kind of like infinite connections to infinite people you don't even remember in your life. They're picking up and leaving the bar. I don't fucking know what time it is, by the way. And if it is 4 a.m, like they say it is at the beginning of the movie, right, you're in your 30s? 4 a.m? Okay. So it's the end of their night. They're leaving this bar and they go back to Arthur Nora's apartment. Haesung grabs his luggage, like he had left his suitcase there, says goodbye to Arthur, like it was nice to meet him.
They shake hands and he tells them, like, you know, come visit Korea.
Yeah, like, come to Korea. I'll show you around. It's a sweet parting. And you can tell that both of them are like, I wish I didn't like you.
Or I'm glad this is over.
I'm glad this is over. Like, my relief is palpable. But I also wish that you weren't, like, also a cool guy.
I wanted to dislike you.
Both of them are feeling that way. Nora's like, okay, well, I'm going to walk him out and, like, wait for his Uber and I'll be right back. And Arthur's like, cool. Mm-hmm. They walk out in silence. Is it literally a full minute? Did you time it?
I did. They walk in silence.
The inside of my brain would itch if I was walking with someone for 1 minute, 60 seconds on earth with God, and I could not speak.
To me, this is mimicking that last walk they had from school, where they walk home in complete silence. Because they didn't need, the Uber's going to pick you up where you at. Like, they could have waited outside of their stoop, but they don't. They decide to walk down the street. And they stop in front of a blue wall.
I mean, we associate blue with Haesung.
But then I'm like, okay, well, what does blue mean for Korea? And I found that blue symbolizes for South Korea specifically. And this is just Google. It may be wrong. Mm-hmm. Immortality and hope.
Oh, wow.
Think about Inyoung. Inyoung is energy. And these energies are immortal. And they just pass through people. And hope, the hope that their Inyoung will continue to pass through each other's lives to a point where that Inyoung can add up and be 8,000 passes.
They stand there in front of this blue wall, silent.
For a whole other minute.
And they slowly start to face each other, mirroring, like turning inwards toward each other. You're kind of like, is this where something happens? And I'm not saying that in the Ariel way. I'm just saying, like,
yeah, not in the asshole. No. Like, is that going to finally happen in this movie? No.
It's kind of like, is this where you get her reciprocating that vulnerability? Because now she's out of earshot of her husband. Now they're alone on the street. Now there's this urgency that he's about to leave. And you're probably not going to see him again, at least not for a long time. Is now when she's kind of like, you know, what the therapists call the doorknob comment. You go through a totally normal fucking therapy session and then you get to the very end and you're like, oh, and I killed my parents at when your hand is on the doorknob and then you're ready to leave.
Oh, no. Like, or in movies when they do like a reveal. I've been watching Suits.
Oh, my God.
Whenever they have like the knock you off your feet comment, they just drop a file on your desk and walk away. You're a SVU watcher. You see that shit all the time.
Yeah, I fucking love SVU. But that doesn't mean I agree with this plot device. So you think something, anything will happen, right? She'll reveal her bleeding heart of like, I've loved you for years.
You are anticipating something.
It's like there's this sizzle of tension. Yes. But nothing. They're silent. The amount of restraint, first of all, that it takes to remain silent when you are, I imagine, that nervous. Again, I would perish. I think my mind would explode. I would simply pass away. So,
you know what this reminds me of? You're about to be so mad at me.
Let's go. If you say like High School Musical, I'll kill you.
Okay. Okay. And you'll only understand this because you read the book already.
Okay.
In Purple Hearts, the friend makes them do the exercise where they just stare at each other.
For 60 seconds.
For 1 minute without saying anything.
Because it's supposed to be like a relationship exercise.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry.
No, that's not. It's fine. It makes sense. I'm not mad. Don't worry, guys. It only took until part two to mention Nicholas Galitzine.
And I didn't even talk about you know who.
You knew Voldemort?
His name who must not be mentioned.
Voldemort? I didn't know we were talking about him. So after Haesung and Nora are standing there, his Uber comes. He walks to the Uber, puts his suitcase, you know, either in the trunk or in the seat next to him, turns out to call to her the same way he did when they were kids on their last walk home before she moved to Canada.
as he does that, he turns and he goes, hey, the same way when they were kids that she was going to continue up the steps. And he calls out to her because ellos se iban ahí sin decir nada. Mm-hmm. And then they cut to them as kids in that same spot. But the shot when they were kids is a shot in the daytime. This shot is a shot at nighttime. So to me, this is letting you know they're still those kids. Those kids are part of who they are. And they still see each other in that way. And still hold each other and regard each other the same way they did when they were young. They still have that love for each other. And that's always going to be there.
Mm-hmm. It's like a story ending. Daytime and nighttime. What do you associate with nighttime? Endings. So like, yeah. The story's over. Right. At least for now, it's over. He calls out her name, Korean name, Nayoung.
It also says a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Of how much he represents her roots.
She replies with like this hum of acknowledgement, the same way she did when she was a kid. And that has to be a cultural thing because Nora, I mean, like they, the characters in the movie, do that hum like a lot. That must mean many different things in Korean, whether it's like an acknowledgement, agreement, denial, whatever. Depending on the context.
Dominicans have mad hums.
Dominicans just point their chins, yo. I'm gonna stick out my lip, point my chin at stuff. You know, she has this little like smile quirked on her face because I think they're both recalling the similarity between this moment and their goodbye when they were kids. Except now it's the inverse, right? Daytime versus nighttime. He's leaving, not her. She's the one who's going to have to deal with the fallout, if any fallout, right? Of his departure, not the other way around. And he asks, what if this is a past life as well? And we're already something else to each other in our next life. What do you think we are there? And she says,
I don't know.
Watching it again, the first time, I'm like, God damn, Nora, like, show a feeling. But watching it again, I'm like, she's not literally biting her cheeks, but she's like biting from saying other things. And an eagle-eyed viewer will notice that like her eyes are maybe a little shinier than a normal eye. He kind of takes that in and he says, me neither. And then he's getting into the Uber and he turns back to her and goes, see you then. This is the most patient Uber driver on earth. The guy pulls away and Nora is left standing there. Now she's alone.
For a minute. And she kind of just stands there processing.
From this point until the end of the movie, we're not at a close angle to her face. We maintain the same distance away from her, which captures her entire body in the frame. So you're not getting like big details of what her face is doing or her slightly wetter than normal eyes. And so she stands there for a minute and then turns to walk maybe the one block's worth of distance back to her apartment. She's wearing these amazing combat boots. She's wearing this amazing black dress with like slits up the side. She looks so fucking cool. And she's just walking towards her home. And Arthur is sitting on the stoop of their apartment building just having a smoke. And when she sees him, she immediately starts sobbing.
And breaks down in his arms.
I'm gonna cry.
And in this part, I recall something, which is when she talks about how Haesung was always there when she was young. Mm-hmm. And she cried. Now she's arriving to Arthur and he's the one comforting her in this moment of vulnerability.
Briefly, we cut to Haesung in the back of the Uber as the sun is like just beginning to light up the sky around them. He's in the very same position in which he's shown after he and Nora have their first and last date, but she's asleep, leaning her head on his shoulder. Now he's in the back of the car alone. Fades to blue. That's past lives, baby.
That's past lives. Oof. When you're watching this, you're feeling all of these emotions. You're made to feel everything. And that might be because of the pace. That might be because you're paying attention, because you're made to be paying attention, right? As a non-native Korean speaker, you have to read through the dialogue. It feels so real as you're watching it. It feels like tangible. Like, this isn't a love story. This is just a story about a girl from Korea.
I was gonna say, this isn't a love story, but it is a story about love.
Oh, Najah, you're so right. I love how you said that. this is not a love story. This is a story about love and how love's different for every person and how each relationship you have in your life, you love differently.
The way Paola and I turn to each other, just full wet face. I mean,
full sob. Oh my God.
Halfway through a hitching breath of just like.
You guys, listen, maybe we're just soft. Simps. Like maybe we're just soft. Mass out soft. Here. We mass soft. Like. So if you've seen this movie, I want to know your reaction. Are you like my loving and adorable and very affectionate husband who's like, nothing fucking happened.
Nothing what happened. The fuck happened. And if you needed me to tell the story of this movie, I could tell it in 5 minutes.
I can tell this story in
if
5 minutes.
If a man wrote this movie, came, it'd be 5 minutes.
So you mean he visited her and then he went back home?
Okay. Literally, that's the same guy that's like Pride and Prejudice is just a bunch of people going to each other's houses.
Quite literally, yes. But no.
That's not the point.
Or do you see it the way we see it? Because it's a masterpiece. A masterpiece. I don't know. Maybe that's a strong word, but.
The fact that this was her first movie.
Dude, that's what I'm saying.
It does make me want to die. I'm not going to lie to you. What am I going to accomplish in my life? Making you a shitty pair of pants? God damn.
And just the attention to detail. Anything that is being shown on camera is telling you something. It's communicating a message. It's either foreshadowing or it's exposing something about somebody.
I think there's also this feeling of care. Each moment is cared for and held. Each feeling and expression is cared for and held. Even though the movie is not, quote unquote, slow paced, there's like space around these feelings and moments and declarations, and like they're kind of like honored by the filmmakers.
It makes you as a viewer care about these people. You care about Nora, you care about Haesung, you start to care about Arthur, and you're like, fuck, everybody, like, it feels meditative. You're supposed to just think on it. You're supposed to reflect the whole time. You're supposed to reflect.
It's the other thing. It's like Celine Song is writing this from, you know, many of her own experiences, this very intimate and specific perspective. But it is such a universal feeling to have known someone, have had it not work out for maybe reasons beyond your control, and spending years after wondering.
I mean, those what ifs, right? Those what ifs that... Hey,
join
Song
me
saying,
and
what
on my
this?
Favorite game what show, that? What If, of Naja's Mind at 3 a.m. it's not fun and no one wins any prizes.
You know, so there's so many moments throughout this movie that pop out at me. You know that part when they are at the park by the East River and they're walking under the bridge, mm-hmm. and they're kind of like calling each other out for not talking for the past 12 years. Oh, I visited Korea and I couldn't find you. Oh, but Dios. You had a boyfriend. Oh, but you had a girlfriend. This scene visually to me is saying water under a bridge. Let bygones be bygones. Because as they're having this conversation, they're literally walking under the bridge and is signaling, let water flow. Let it flow. Water under the bridge.
I think a lot of movies that we interpret as like romantic or like romantic comedies and lots of media that I like to consume. This is not a value statement on this because this is my shit. Like a lot of romantic media is very, the pressure is high, right? It needs to establish high stakes. It's like, I need to have this person now. That's like a smut situation. Or like, you're the only person for me. I don't need anyone else. Passion, big feelings. Like there's this level of urgency and this like lack of acceptance. Lack of acceptance of the circumstances. Lack of accepting, we've changed, we're different, life has changed. No, we need to fight. We need to fight through this together. Like, because it makes things enjoyable. Like a high level of urgency, like raising your stress a little bit, like it commits you.
Things are happening.
Things are happening. It commits you to the story. It commits you to the characters. It gives you something to root for when the stakes are established. I think it's so difficult, but important to tell compelling stories of acceptance and like love, but it doesn't work out the way that you want it to. and life, but life being kind of ordinary and extraordinary at the same time. Nora's a super ordinary person. She's also cool as absolute fuck. She's a fucking playwright in New York who's an immigrant from Korea who grew up in Canada. That's fucking cool. That's also just a person that you would meet. People are that interesting.
And she says that in the movie. She's like, I'm just a girl from Korea. To her husband, when her husband's like, oh, you make my life feel so big. This value that she brings to his life, or like this big love that he feels for her. By her saying, I'm just a girl from Korea, she's almost like, why are you putting all of that on me?
But she and Hae-sung engage in the same kind of self-deprecation. Because Hae-sung is like, I'm the only son and I'm not doing well enough and I shouldn't get married because I don't have enough money. I'm just some guy.
I should be doing more.
I'm
just an
ordinary guy. Yeah. Nora is like, I'm just some girl from Korea. I'm just some girl.
But I think she says that in reminding her husband, like, the way you feel ordinary, I'm ordinary. Mm-hmm. I'm not any bigger or smaller than you.
I like that. There's just this overarching sense of like evenness, acceptance.
Yeah. Between the both of them.
Engaging kind of like equally in their partnership. And even just like accepting the other's feelings, her complicated feelings for Hae-sung, how he's comforting her because she's sad about a man. What? Lesser men have been brought to their knees by the very notion.
A childhood friend.
Okay. Gosh. You get what I'm saying? Like, there are a few people in my life that I could imagine, and like, hopefully, you know, my spouse would be one of them, that mm-hmm. I could mourn that type of connection to. That I could go to them and be like, I'm so fucking sad that I just saw my childhood friend and I realized we're both married to other people or some shit like that. It takes such a level of like acceptance, empathy, security to handle that and like hold it for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this movie just leaves you feeling tender for every character.
And you know, another way that I feel, and this might just be me overanalyzing again.
No.
A way that I feel that they also show the equality between Arthur and Nora. Mm-hmm. Their bodies are always facing the same way. They're always headed the same direction, essentially. Even when they're at the bar, the way that they're plays, right? Nora is between them both. Mm-hmm. She is the bridge that connects these two worlds. She's the bridge that connects Arthur, American man, and
author of Boner.
Hae-sung, author of Boner. And Hae-sung, Korean man, this other part of her identity. She's like the bridge between these two worlds. Mm-hmm. When you're sitting in a group of three, everyone's kind of facing the same way because you all want to be engaged in the conversation. However, when you see them sitting at the bar, Nora and Arthur are facing one way and then Hae-sung is facing them. Part of the symbolism of the movie is always showing Hae-sung and Nora facing each other, almost like they're a direct reflection of each other.
I think it's recognition. I think, what do you recognize when you look into a mirror? You recognize your own reflection. When you are constantly up against a person and you're mirroring each other, facing each other, looking at each other, you recognize them, mm-hmm. whether that's from this life or previous ones or future ones.
So as kids, they recognize something in each other. Nadja, you're a genius. You're absolutely right.
I can't stand you because it's like you say it and I'm like, she's fucking with me. She's being sarcastic.
Yo, that's so true. Yes, recognizing something of yourself in somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Hit me before we torture our listeners any further.
Hit me, baby, one more time. Loneliness.
Hit me with this wrap up.
You want to wrap it up? I mean, it's only about to be- Also, guys, if you know, I want information on something. There is something I notice about this movie, and that is that Celine Song loves a window shop. And even at the end of the movie, when Hae-sung's driving off, the camera's kind of moving at the speed of what a vehicle would move like. It's almost like you're watching him through another vehicle, mm-hmm. having this view of a spectator looking onto somebody else's life. All the buildings start to blur. And all you really see are the mesh of windows. Even up until the very end of the movie, you see like all the windows, the way you see them in a city, and they're kind of all blurring together because you're just driving past them quickly. I want help in interpreting that.
May I? I have an idea.
Please.
As a person who lives in said city, right? I live in New York. And just over the weekend, Ryan and I were waiting for the train, which is elevated in my neighborhood. And from the platform, you can see directly into 20 different apartments. So none of the fucking curtains were drawn, were closed. And Ryan and I were like on the platform and we're just staring into people's fucking apartments. There are people in there. There are people that made eye contact with us staring into their apartments. Windows, especially in cities, especially when you are densely packed in with other people, I think their symbolism is twofold. They offer this minuscule separation. It decontextualizes a situation for you just enough where watching something through a window warps your understanding of what's actually happening. Yeah, you're seeing it with your eyes, but you're not 100% involved in the situation. Going back to like the spectator and treating the viewer as spectator involved in the story, the intimacy of watching someone through their window.
God damn it, Naga.
Yo, I'm getting you. This is my, I'm on fire.
And now that you put it that way, it made me think about, there's this quote in the book Fault in Our Stars by John Green that I think about almost on a weekly basis whenever
I'm driving. We read that book together. We co-read that book.
There's this thing that Hazel said where she's like either looking into her boyfriend's house or looking into her house. And she just sees it as an ordinary house. And she says, the weird thing about houses is that they almost always look like nothing is happening inside of them, even though they contain most of our lives. So it's so unassuming, right? A house, a building, they're so unassuming. You only get, like you said, a glimpse into whatever's happening inside, but everything is happening inside. And that's what you get from Nora, I feel like, just a glimpse into how she feels.
For as much time as you spend with her, she's incredibly well contained.
God damn it. Well, there you go. That's what it is.
That's what it is.
Forget it, viewers. I got my answer.
That's showbiz, baby.
All right, Naja.
Let's go.
So that was Past Lives. Amazed.
That was Past Lives. Thank you for spending approximately two of those lives with us, hearing us describe this
movie. All right, Naja. Let's wrap this up. We can't say book or movie because this is a fucking original screenplay written by Celine Song, queen and genius. Will your husband watch this with you, Naja? He did.
He did.
He did. He
would watch it with me.
He enjoyed it. My husband watched it because of how much it moved me and was like, what the fuck? Something's wrong with you because nothing literally happened. So he will never watch this with me again. And that's fine because I will cry. I'll just sit and cry by myself.
Or with me.
Or with you. On a scale of one to ardently admire and love, how do you feel about this movie?
Dog, this is like a smooth nine. Easy nine.
Yeah.
9.5. I mean, she's approaching 10. This is not one of those shows where we like try to limit how many 10s we would give or whatever, how much we like love movies. It's not a competition. I'm not waiting for the most perfect 10. Man, it like, this movie's so fucking good. My qualms with it are so dumb, silly, and personal, which is like, I want there to be more love. I want more declaration. Like, that's just me.
More expression.
That's not the quality of the movie. The movie's fucking great.
I'm going to have to give this movie a 10 for me.
Guys, we ardently admire and love it.
I ardently admire and love this. And I'm not telling you it's because I'm going to rewatch it 100 times. I may not. I don't know that this is going to be part of my rotation.
Oh, that's how I fucking felt about Moonlight. Oh.
It's just the way that it felt. It truly brought me to tears. And it moved me in a way that I wasn't even expecting it. It's an artist's movie, for sure. Generational trauma, Naja. I think the obvious one is...
immigration.
Immigrating.
Yeah.
Immigrating, being a child of immigrants. The immigrant experience. As a whole, I think that if your family immigrated or you yourself immigrated, you can see your experiences in these characters.
I was going to say even like the moment where she's talking about Haesung and like, you know, he makes me feel more Korean and less Korean. Right. Because like at this point, I've been in New York for over a decade. Right. I remember being younger And I, you know, we, Bon and I have mentioned this many times before, like we were both born here to a very Dominican family. That is so infinitely different than being born in the Dominican Republic and immigrating here as kids.
We saw that experience too close to us because, you know, we saw
tons
our cousins
of family members did
that.
It for sure. Our brothers did it, cousins did it, other like adult family members did it, and fully baked adults. I remember being little, and when I say little, I just mean like little, probably up through my teenage years, and identifying so hard as not American first. I considered myself like, I am Dominican because this is my background. It's my upbringing. We speak Spanish at home. Mm-hmm. I eat rice and beans. Like, it was my whole shit. I'm Dominican and I happen to be born here. Shut the fuck up, younger Nadja. As an adult, I'm like, dog, I'm American 70% and Dominican 30% because it's just, you cannot extricate yourself from like this culture soup in which we live in the US. Like, I just can't. Mm-hmm. And if you drop me down in DR, it doesn't help that I look the way I do, even though I would look the same way whether I was born there or not. I would have a hard time readjusting to this culture.
Of course, now you can say that, oh, I'm 70% American now. You've lived here for more.
I've lived here my entire goddamn life.
You lived here for a bigger percentage of your life. When you're 10, that ratio is much smaller. And the only identifier you have is the life that you spend at home. And at home, our life is Dominican. As opposed to when you're an adult, you're not at home with mom, con mami, papi anymore. Like, now your whole life is an American life. You're working, you're going to school, your friends. It's such a bigger part of your life as you get older. Yeah. Do they stay together?
Not.
Oh, obviously. Well, it depends on which day you're talking about.
That's true.
I think Nora and Arthur.
I think they stay together.
I think they're stronger now. They're stronger now than ever.
Yeah.
She's crying into his shoulder now.
I think they're in it.
Haesung, does he go back and get back together with his girlfriend and decide to marry her?
Probably.
Maybe. Do they meet again in another life? What are they going to be to each other in the next life? We don't know. So sweet. So sweet.
Yeah. All right, listener. You've heard maybe every thought we've ever had. So what are your thoughts? What's your past life about? Get juicy. Get detailed. Ooh. Get anonymous. Get anonymous in these comments, but expose yourself to us in our DMs and tell us your past life story. Who, what, where, when, and why? Because we would really love to know. And maybe ooh, we'll talk about it if you guys send us like really good ones.
Who do you share Inyan with?
I ain't gonna tell you that on mic.
Ooh.
My husband.
How many passes of Inyan?
Only my husband.
I share so much Inyan with Ariel. Oh my god.
It's more than 8,000 layers at this point. It's like 10. It's like 10,000.
Definitely more than 8,000 layers.
We're like using that so wrong. But yeah, tell us your favorite Inyan stories or your favorite missed connection stories. Thank you guys for allowing us a little Inyan into your lives.
We yearn for the burn.
We're longing, yearning, wanting. That's my routine. Skincare and otherwise. So yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
No, we burn for the yearn. That's
we do
what
both.
I
no,
say.
I yearn for burning. I burn for you.
Oh no. Guys, so glad to be part of your Inyan on this day in this way. So thank you so much for listening.
If you fucking made it this far.
If you like what you heard and want to hear more, please leave a review anywhere you get your podcasts. Come and find us on Instagram at SisFixPodcast or shoot us an email at SisFixPodcast@gmail.com.
Let us know what you think. If you have suggestions or movie requests for us to cover in the future.
Thank you.
Bye.